talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from the top of Burnaby Mountain, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. And hopefully that will be a little bit more resonated even on today's show, because Pranjali, who has joined me in the studio, or who I'm joining in the studio this morning, we're going to talk about women and climate, gender and climate, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to talking about the intersection of climate change as an issue and like gender as a form of like sort of like social system, I would say. So let's see how this conversation goes, because that is like one of my areas of interest in the undergrad research that I want to do. So I'm very excited to talk about it with you.
Great. Yeah, I'm quite excited too, and realized when I was sort of, you know, pulling some threads together to gather my thoughts about it, which still may end up quite random, really. but that I do have a lot of sort of thoughts and feelings about, you know, how this affects, and as you brought up, you know, as a systemic reality for all of us, really, with some people being more adversely affected because of, you know, where they live in the world and the color of their skin and their gender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are different like axes of intersectionality and vulnerability there. But yeah, let's dive into the song, the first song of the day, and then we could talk more about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go.
We're going to hear a few songs in today's show. We're going to start with something that doesn't feel so climate changey, but it's definitely about the land. And it's from one of my favorite artists ever. And this song always makes me tear up, because it's just a beautiful tribute to what it means to sort of work the land. It is called Trouble in the Fields by Nancy Griffith.
Bankers warm like locusts out there, turning away our yields.
Fields from Nancy Griffith here on Intravenous. My name's Robin. I don't think I said that at the beginning of the show. And I'm here with Pranjali, and we are going to talk about climate justice, climate equity, climate and the intersectionality of gender. And I wanted to just start off with a poem. I pulled out this book that I have called If Woman Rose Rooted by Sharon Blackie. And it's not per se a climate book, but it definitely talks about the land and our displacement from the land and our disconnection from the land. And the book starts off with a poem or a quote from D.H. Lawrence. It says, "Oh, what a catastrophe, what a maiming of love, when it was made a personal, merely personal feeling, taken away from the rising and setting of the sun, and cut off from the magic connection of the solstice and equinox. This is what is the matter with us. We are bleeding at the roots. Because we are cut off from the earth and sun and stars, and love is a grinning mockery, because, poor blossom, we plucked it from its stem of the tree of life and expected it to keep on blooming in our civilized vase on the table."
I have, like, I can just say that it is so great. Because, like, the connection between the land, the nature, and in some of the cultures that I'm aware of, the human body is said to be made of five elements, which is the wind, water, soil, and other two. But it is, like, called that human is composed of those components. And when we tend to aspire something and we are running for something or from something, we tend to lose our connection with the land and with the place or the origin that we started from. So I think this poem or this excerpt really brings out this idea of, you know, being connected, being rooted, which is very important when we talk about and understand or think about catastrophe. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. What I particularly appreciated sort of in that poem is that, you know, we give so much weight to quote unquote civilized life, mm-hmm. you know, and as D.H. Lawrence says in the poem, you know, we've plucked the blossom of nature from the tree of life and put it in this vase of civility and, you know, sort of couched it in what is, you know, what we call probably now the Western way, you know, the democratic way, the way of progress.
The way of free will. Yeah.
And and things are just shriveling and wiveling and dying. You know? And there's something really just sorrowful and profound about the reality of that for all of us, you know. And as I sort of mentioned in the beginning of the show, even though we're still kind of in the beginning, you know, more so for a lot of other people who, you know, live rurally, live in other countries, you know, live in places where they don't get a choice of where they get to live.
Absolutely. And I think this race for being modern, this race of being more civilized, is one or the other way creeped into this phenomena of like globalization. And like, obviously, we relate that with industrialization and all those processes, which again bleed into this idea of like climate change. But the funny part is that people think that if we were to think only about climate change, our progress would be halted. We will go back in centuries and, you know, we just, I don't know, like people, I have heard crazy theories about climate change being like, oh, if you don't use vehicles, are we going to use, I don't know, bullock carts or something? Like, no, there are different alternatives when we think about future going ahead. So it's really the way of thinking, how you really want to imagine. Do you want to see something that is hopeful, or do you just want to deny the issue? So that is the sort of lens that I think is important to note in there. Because like we, when we talk about climate change, we're not against modernity or this idea of, you know, progress in some way or in the other. But it's like progress for whom, and who is being left out in this progress, and who is being harmed from this progress is sort of a question.
Yeah. That idea of hopefulness, right? And that in hopefulness, hopefully, nobody gets left out of the process, because then that's not very hopeful. It's kind of status quo, because that's a lot of what we have now, right? Is that there's a lot of hope for the few, and very little hope for sort of the rest of the folks. One of the things that I just want to sort of preface, because I think it's important. You know, there's a lot of debate on, you know, whether climate change is part of a natural cycle, or, you know, whether climate change is human made, and, you know, how much we're implicated in that. And the reality is that it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? What we're experiencing, and I really appreciate a friend of mine, Christine. She's been doing a lot of climate work for 20, 25 years. And she has quit calling it climate change. She just calls it climate. Because it is what it is in the present. Right? And when we can look at what the climate situation is in the now and reflect to what it was, or, you know, what it has been, that gives us a reflection of what that change means, right? And that change comes from the stories of the people who are living on the ground within that environment. Right, which is part of what's really important when we talk about climate, is because unless we're from that place, which we hearkened to earlier, right, we don't know what it's supposed to be like, or what it has been like, or what the expectations of that environment are like, right? And so the reality is that that climate exists. Climate has always existed. Climate changes and has its own patterns. And it's how those patterns, whether they're influenced by humans or by, you know, the electromagnetic force of the sun bolting its rays or, you know, whatever the things are, it's still doing things to our Earth that are impacting our people.
Yeah. No, I really like this idea of picturizing and understanding of climate change as happening now, because like that's very important, and that is the part of the reason that whenever I talk about climate change, I don't say climate change, I say climate crisis, because it's more, it shows the urgency, it shows that what is needed is the action that is needed is right now, and it's not something in a distant future, or this idea of like relating climate change only with the youngsters and like the future generation, oh, 50 years down the line this is going to happen. No, it's happening right now, and it is going to continue happening. So the only decision that you want to make is, do you want to make how much worse, how much do you want it to be like bad? I don't know, like the degree of rapidness is what we're talking about here, because like we are in the moment of climate change already. And as you said, at this point, it does not matter if it is created by humans or not. And this idea of denying it as just being like an environmental phenomena is beyond discussion. Like, I don't know why we are even still having these conversations. It's a matter of scientific fact now. That, and I think IPCC report was given 2 or 3 days ago, and they talked about something that is really alarming, in the sense that it's 7 years from now that we need to control all the emissions to have that 1.5 degree increase in temperatures. And it can be like problematic in the way it is projected. Why am I saying that? Because the people who consume this information, so people who know IPCC is doing these works and these reports are out, are already alarmed. We need to tap into people who don't think that it is happening right now. So it is, I think, the part of the problem is, how do we communicate about climate change? And how do we talk about climate crisis? I think, yeah, that is very, very important too, yeah.
Well, and I think this brings us to the issue of gender, right? And the reality of the disconnect between 80% of the people displaced by climate change, climate crisis, climate impacts, are women and girls. But only 33% of the presenters at the last COP, the last COP, were women. And that was after they mandated to have more women participate, and, you know, more women's voices included in policy discussions and, you know, impact studies and, you know, all of these things. And it's still only 33% when the majority of the impact is felt by women. And so, again, you know, hearkening back to that idea that, you know, we need to be listening to the people on the ground, you know, who are experiencing the crisis, so that it's not this top-down phenomenon, right? Like, it really is going to take a grassroots initiative, and most grassroots initiatives are led by women, started by women.
And like, when I say that my research looks into climate change and gender, I specifically look at social movements and like how like this climate's movement has been shaped and how it has seen a lot of like women, as to say, have more of like their contribution. They are like, for example, Greta Thunberg. She is like one of the climate icons, if I were to call her something like that. So she is a young female, you know. So when we talk about all these sort of progressive issues, if I were to say, we related with women and we say that, you know, we need more voices. That is great. But like, if you're giving them representation, if we are allowing them to be at those conferences, the next question is, whatever they say in those conferences, is that going somewhere? Is that turning into some decision? Is their voice actually being heard, or is it just like present there? And definitely 33% is a very, very, it's like a passing mark. So you get like a D grade or something. So you just pass in the exam. You're not actually giving them representation, first off. Second, even if you are trying to open more discussions and have more room for those voices, I think it is very important to give an actual agency for them to do something. They can't be just saying this is happening to us, and if it doesn't go anywhere, it's not good.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Greta Thunberg, I found a song mm-hmm. that she contributed to. It's by a band called 1975. They're an English band, and they collaborated with Greta. Mm-hmm. So you'll hear her voice over top some dreamy atmospheric synthesizers and pianos, and we're gonna have a listen to this track. From what I can tell, it's self-titled, 1975, here on Intravenous.
Beginning of a climate and ecological crisis, and we need to call it what it is, an emergency. We must acknowledge that we do not have the situation under control and that we don't have all the solutions yet, unless those solutions mean that we simply stop doing certain things. We must admit that we are losing this battle. We have to acknowledge that the older generations have failed. All political movements in their present form have failed. But Homo sapiens have not yet failed. Yes, we are failing, but there is still time to turn everything around. Can still fix this. We still have everything in our own hands. But unless we recognize the overall failures of our current systems, we most probably don't stand a chance. We are facing a disaster of unspoken sufferings for enormous amounts of people. And now is not the time for speaking politely or focusing on what we can or cannot say. Now is the time to speak clearly. Solving the climate crisis is the greatest and most complex challenge that Homo sapiens have ever faced. The main solution, however, is so simple that even a small child can understand it. We have to stop our emissions of greenhouse gases. And either we do that or we don't. You say that nothing in life is black or white, but that is a lie. A very dangerous lie. prevent a 1.5 degree of warming, or we don't. Either we avoid setting off that irreversible chain reaction beyond human control, or we don't. Either we choose to go on as our civilization, or we don't. That is as black or white as it gets. Because there are no gray areas when it comes to survival. Now we all have a choice. We can create transformational action that will safeguard the living conditions for future generations. Or we can continue with our business as usual and fail. That is up to you and me. And yes, we need a system change rather than individual change. But you cannot have one without the other. If you look through history, all the big changes in society have been started by people at the grassroots level. People like you and me. So I ask you to please wake up and make the changes required possible. To do your best is no longer good enough. We must all do the seemingly impossible. Today, we use about 100 million barrels of oil every single day. There are no politics to change that. There are no rules to keep that oil in the ground. So we can no longer save the world by playing by the rules. Because the rules have to be changed. Everything needs to change. And it has to start today. So everyone out there, it is now time for civil disobedience. It is time to rebel.
All right, you heard it here from Greta Thunberg on Intravenous CJSF 90.1 FM Campus Community Radio, where we are broadcasting on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name's Robin.
I am Pranjali.
And
we're talking about climate crisis.
Yes.
But no, from her song slash, I don't know, like an anthem or something, I really like the part where she talks about the need of change in everything. That might mean including more indigenous knowledge into how we talk about climate resilience and how we understand climate change in general. So that might mean thinking gender as not only being women and, you know, just this idea of like a binary world of, so like a man, masculinity, femininity, but thinking from a way that gender is like a power dynamics, is a power relation. And I see Robin has to say something.
No, I'm just nodding okay. In agreement with you.
No, I was going to say that this idea of having women on COP and different international organizations is great. And one of my research, like I was going through scholarly articles, and they find that this inclusion of their voices has been happening since 1997. So like they have created different rooms where only like supposedly women just sit together and talk about it. And like 2 to 3 people from that group briefs the whole like, you know, the organization about what was happening. But now we see that women are more directly included in the conversation, the bigger conversation. But it is a very slow process. It has been almost 20 to 30 years when it started. So if we are moving at this rate, I don't think we'll reach anywhere. So we need to have those voices turn into decisions, those concerns turn into actions, and those recommendations.